We're back here with the only gold medalist to ever wrestle professionally, Kurt Angle. And, you know, Kurt, the question I get all the time, I get it on Twitter, I get it on my Q&As on my website. Do you think Kurt Angle will ever return to WWE? I know that you know there's probably not a definitive answer for that, but I guess maybe the best way to phrase it, would you be interested in returning to WWE?
Oh, without a doubt, JR. You know, it's hard because, you know, in the business now, you know, you really want security. And not that I'm hurting financially or anything, and, you know, TNA has treated me well over the last 7.5 years. But, you know, nobody's allowed to talk anymore. You know, I can't approach WWE right now. I'm not under my contract. I believe there was some kind of lawsuit a couple of years ago, and, you know, I can't really go there and meet with Vince or Triple H or Stephanie. It's almost like if I wait out my contract and talk to them then, do I know they're interested? They really haven't told me. Can I call somebody to ask somebody? That's not really, I'm not going to get the complete 100% answer. So are they interested? If they are, you know, how do I find out? I don't know. So, you know, do I sign with TNA? I could sign tomorrow with TNA, but do I keep the offer open and wait? That remains to be seen. And when I do that, am I taking a chance? Because if I wait and then try to sign with WWE and they're not interested, can I go back to TNA?
I don't know.
It's a tough situation, but I am interested. You know, I always said I was going to finish out my career in WWE. But at the same time, you know, this past year has been a really, really tough roller coaster ride for me because 6 months ago I would have told you, yes, I'm going back to WWE. I'm tired of this crap. I didn't like the way I was being booked, but a guy named John Gubrick came in to TNA, and he's been doing things a lot better, I would say. You know, and I think it's hard for him because he has a lot of hats right now, and the money's a little, you know, desolate.
Yep.
So he doesn't have a real lot to work with like, you know, he would want to. But he is a hard worker, and he knows what he's doing, and you know, I have a great relationship with him. I have a great relationship with Dixie. She's always treated me right from financial point to, you know, communication. But at the same time, you know, I got tired of the way I was being booked and I just wanted out. This past 6 months, I've kind of looked at it and said, well, it's not so bad. And let me see if I can really help this company now. So I'm really not sure yet, but I am interested in talking to WWE. I do want to know what they have to say. You know, I always said I would finish out my career there, but I just don't know right now.
Yeah, I understand that. John Gaborik is a good guy. I worked with him at WWE. He's a good-hearted guy.
Yeah.
He's got a challenging role or roles, plural, in WWE or in TNA. I think I met once with the Carter family, and I can't tell you that I've ever met any nicer people than Bob and Janice Carter. I just think that they're wonderful people. Absolutely.
They are. They're great people, JR.
Wonderful.
Great people to know, and they really support you. They're wonderful people. I know that Bob and Janice have been a little more hands-on now, which is good to know.
Yeah. Well, let me ask this question. Would regarding WWE, again, assuming, we're just going on an assumption here, but would their wellness program, including the drug testing and the CTE testing and all the things that they would want you to undergo, be an issue for you? Because let me tell you this.
Not at this point. A year ago, yes. I was under, you know, a lot of, you know, under doctor's prescription, but still, I was taking painkillers. I was taking Xanax. I was drinking alcohol. Not that that's illegal, but at the same time, I got myself in a lot of trouble. And, you know, it was time for me to go clean. And it wasn't just for me, but my family. It was about my career. So I've been clean and sober almost 11 months now, and I enjoy it. I'm having a better time with my family. I'm more clear-minded. I'm listening to my body. As far as the physical, I've seen and heard rumors, Kurt Angle can't pass the physical. Gosh dang, I don't have a problem passing the physical. My neck has no issues. Yeah, my knee, I just had it done, but I'm going to bounce back from it. I already know from where I stand right now with my progression, I'm going to be just fine. There isn't a physical that I won't pass. I will pass it. The drug testing, I'm clean. I'm not taking anything. So I really don't have anything to be afraid of. It's about if I do go there, it's about going up there and proving myself.
Sure.
And I believe that Vince McMahon and Triple H and Stephanie are going to want to see that I'm clean. They're going to want to see that I'm serious about this and that I clean my life up, and I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
I had some tough issues with Vince before I left, and, we left a little bit bittersweet. But, at the time, I wanted to be the face, but I believe Vince wanted me to be the face, but I was reckless. I was taking the painkillers, and I was taking the benzos, and I was taking other stuff. And, Vince started, saying, oh, boy, I need to keep this guy at a distance. And I don't blame him for that, so I got a little bitter about it. I blamed it on him and not on myself. And now that I'm clean and sober, I realize I'm the one that messed up. And I messed up a real good thing. And, if I do go back there, I'm going to have to make amends with Vince and say, listen, you're right, I was wrong, and, let's move on from here.
Well, as a former talent relations head there, I would make sure that I'd check you from stem to stern. And the good news about that is, and for two reasons. One, the company has to know that they're not putting you at risk. That's imperative. The health of the athlete, not the performer thing. I'm not a big performer guy. Well, performer is like the guy on a flying trapeze, or the performer is the guy that performs
right
on Broadway. But the athlete and the guy, I want to make sure that my athletes are healthy, and we're not putting them in jeopardy. And the good news, the second thing about that is, you're in the city where Dr. Joseph Maroon lives,
yeah,
and he's not going to allow anything to slip by. I mean, he's sharp, and I think that, if it hadn't been for Dr. Maroon operating on Bruno, that Bruno would have never come back to the campfire with WWE and been inducted to the Hall of Fame, or
you're right,
and no, what wouldn't have happened. So you got there with, you got Maroon there, and I would tell Maroon, I said, I want this guy checked out maybe more thoroughly than anybody we've ever looked at, because he is an Olympian. He has gone, his body's gone through a lot, and I want to make sure that we don't put him in jeopardy. Because
right,
if he's good to go, I got a player. I got a guy that I can use for and utilize, more specifically, a few more years. But I got to know that he's okay. And I think
I agree with you, JR. And Dr. Maroon was my doctor before I left WWE. He is very strict, and he's hands on, and he talks to Triple H and Vince every week. And I know how it goes up there, and I love the fact that WWE is doing this now. I think it's really important. I think everybody needs to be 100% healthy and drug free, and I think it's the best thing, especially for a publicly traded company.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's Dr. Maroon has done so much. I mean, he just worked on Ryan Daniels'
right
neck.
Yep.
And I believe that the surgery was a success. I'm all for it. I mean, whatever physical I need to pass, whatever drug testing they need to do with me. I'm clean now, it took me years. It took me 10 years to get 100% clean. And now that I am clean and clear-minded, I'm willing to, obviously finish out my career wherever it is. I'm going to do it clean. And I do take on any drug testing, anything I have to do. I think it's great. I'm actually part of the WWE Rehabilitation Program. I even have AA calls every Wednesday night with a great group of guys. I've been involved in that for the past 11 months, and I try not to miss a week. I go to AA meetings a couple times a week here, and I do that meeting every week, and I'm staying true to my recovery, and I don't want to slip.
if you dedicate your life to getting to staying clean, Kurt, the way you dedicated the wrestling room training and to go to the make the Olympic team and represent your country, because in my view, staying clean and sober for you and for any of us is a hell of a lot more important than any gold medal. Because the gold medal's great. I mean, yeah, it's an amazing thing. But being a drunk or a drug addict and not being a father or not being around is the biggest fail you can ever a guy could ever have. Because it will all drug addiction and alcohol addiction always leads to chaos, heartbreak, and generally death. And yeah. So that's where you are on that kind of deal. And I had a problem just a month or so ago with finding out that I was taking Ambien. And right. And Ambien is a, if you look at it, it's a short-term drug solution or a medical solution for insomnia.
Yeah.
I've been taking Ambien for years.
Yeah, it gets addictive.
And I was hallucinating. I was missing days. I was forgetting where I was. I mean, I was in a position that, and I wasn't doing any drugs. I wasn't doing street drugs. I wasn't going out and getting blasted at happy hour. I thought there's something wrong. I thought I was either getting the onset of dementia or Alzheimer's, and it was the damn Ambien.
Yeah.
So I know that WWE has got a great program, and for you to be willing and to take that challenge to be clean and sober is the greatest news that regarding Kurt Angle that I could ever hear, because that's going to mean that you're going to live longer. And, you know, who knows? I may end up in Pittsburgh, and I want a buddy to hang around with.
You're damn right, JR. But you're right, JR. I missed out on my kids. I was drugged up, drinking every night. I was a failure as a father, a husband. You know, I didn't care about anything but my pills and my alcohol and getting in the wrestling ring. And that's the only time I was really sober, was when I got in the wrestling ring. You get caught in that thing, and it's a disease, and you just keep sinking and sinking. And the only direction I was going to go from there was death.
Yeah,
and I don't want to die.
I kept thinking.
My life is too important for my kids and to my wife. I don't want to die.
No, I kept thinking, buddy, that I said, he's the next one. He's the next guy. Because it was just, you know, you said, read about it. All right, Kurt got a DUI. Oh, and then Kurt got another DUI. And then, then you're thinking, well, if he had a DUI, he might have taken a Xanax or he might have taken a pain pill because he was hurting. And now he's mixing alcohol with the medication.
Right.
And it says explicitly, as you can put on a bottle, do not consume alcohol.
Don't drink it. Yeah, don't drink while you.
And that's the old wrestler deal. Oh, we're Superman. You know, we're gonna.
Yeah.
We're over. I'm not. That's for somebody else. That's not for me. Hey, look. If you go back to WWE, and you were your own booker. How would you book yourself coming back? How would you want to be? Would you want to be a babyface? Would you want to be a heel? Is there somebody that you would really, or guys that you would really like to be able to work a program with as time goes on? What would be on your wish list if you did go back?
Honestly, there are a lot of great talent up there right now. I didn't really watch for a few years and didn't really think that they had a very talented roster, but they do. Obviously Daniel Bryan is my first choice.
Wow.
And if CM Punk ever comes around again, I'd like to work with him. But I'm looking at Roman Reigns and Cesaro and Rusev. There are some great young talent there that, you know, obviously have a little more to learn, but they're getting there. I obviously want to do another round of Brock Lesnar if I go up to WWE. I always wanted to do that one WrestleMania with Taker, and it just never happened. But, it's understandable, but, not everybody can roll. Just about everybody wrestled Taker at WrestleMania, right? 22 of them. But unfortunately, I wasn't one of them. But there are some really great talent up there, and they're young, and a lot of guys that could really help out and teach. It's fun to watch. And like I said, I watch Impact every week. I watch Raw and SmackDown. I really love the business, and I think that both companies right now have a lot of talent. They have a lot of ability.
I agree.
It's kind of sad that AJ Styles is not with TNA anymore, but I love working with that kid. Wow.
I watched him work. I went to Toronto several weeks ago and did my little one-man show that I do, and the next night I went to the Ring of Honor New Japan show. And I actually watched him work, as best I remember, for the first time in person. And I met him and talked to him. And I got a fairly good, I had a pretty good track record of signing talent. And I had a pretty good track record of communicating with talent by and large. But, man, I'm thinking somebody winking at WWE, basically, missing a boat with this kid. I don't care if he was at TNA. I don't care if he was... he's one of those Impact guys. We're going to get all of our talents going to come from the Performance Center. Well, don't cut off your nose to spite your face sometimes.
The kid has talent. Wow. Yes.
And he's really good. I mean, and he's the kind of guy you'd want in your locker room. He's a classy kid.
Yeah, he's got his head on straight too, JR. No drugs, no alcohol. Great family man, hard worker, just a kid that you want to have in the locker room.
Yeah, I liked him. What did you think of The Undertaker's winning streak going down to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30?
All right, JR, this is tough, but, I didn't think it would ever happen. I thought Taker should probably retire undefeated. But if you're going to do it, there's no more legit guy than Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people said, well, they should have waited and had, one of the young guys like Roman Reigns or Cesaro do it. If I'm Undertaker and I'm going to have, and I decide I want to lose, because I'm sure that he had some say in it, and I want to give a rub to somebody, I'm probably going to pick Brock Lesnar first, because this kid is a legit badass, and there's no shame in losing to Brock Lesnar.
Mm-mm. They found that, Shawn Michaels is on here on this podcast several weeks ago, and he said that the decision was made by Vince about 4 hours before showtime.
Wow.
And that he sat down, went in his office with Taker, and they discussed it. And Vince convinced Taker it was the right time, the right thing to do for the company, for the network launching and all those things. And I know that from what other guys have told me, that Brock was even somewhat uncomfortable having to be the guy that beat The Undertaker, because Brock's got great respect for Mark.
Yes, he does. I wouldn't doubt that, JR, and I'm sure Brock did feel uncomfortable, and rightfully so. I would too. When I wanted to wrestle Undertaker at WrestleMania, I didn't want to beat him. I just wanted to wrestle Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Yeah, right.
I think anybody would. It's a dream match. I know a lot of guys, and I'm not going to say who, but they were complaining because they had Taker instead of the main event. Are you kidding me? Taker is WrestleMania. Like, that is the match you want to be in.
Absolutely.
I heard guys complain about wrestling Triple H instead of being in the world title hunt. Triple H is also a big paying spot,
Yeah.
Like, those are big main events at WrestleMania. So don't complain because you're not in the title match if you're wrestling Triple H or Undertaker, because your payday isn't going to be any better.
Good payday, absolutely. And I've been involved in that process of paying, so mm-hmm. I'm with you on that deal. Hey,
yeah.
Can you, as many ups and downs, and thank God you're on the way, you're in a good place now.
Yeah.
But you've been in real stressful family issues, divorce.
Sure.
The drug and alcohol thing you talked about, which I admire your courage for talking about it, because I think it's therapeutic, quite frankly, but I also think you got to have a set of balls to talk about it. Can you relate to CM Punk abruptly leaving WWE as he did, and kind of leaving on his own terms that, I'm burnt, I'm sore, my body's aching, I'm frustrated with creative or whatever, I got to go home. Can you relate to that? Because here's what I get. I get fans that lash out at me because I defend him because I like the guy, and they don't understand, I don't think, and they think that CM Punk owes them some sort of farewell. And I don't agree with that. That's just me. But what's your take on it?
You know, I didn't really know. I just watched an interview CM Punk did yesterday. I didn't know that he was that banged up. Now that he is and he was, I have to respect the fact that he walked away, whether he comes back or not. You know, the rumor was that he was upset with the booking, and he was upset with these part-timers coming in and taking the main spots of WrestleMania. And it was like I wanted to contact him and say, listen, Punk, you're working full-time now, but it's not going to last forever. And there's going to come a time where you're going to want to go part-time too. And you're going to be able to have that spot at WrestleMania as a part-time worker. So try not to, you know, put the fire out before you end up there, you know, because there might come a time where you're going to want to do that, and the choice is going to be yours. In other words, you know, you have the Undertakers and you have the Rocks that come back, and Triple H, although he's been working pretty full-time, I'd say, you know, these guys, yeah, they're going to have the big spots at WrestleMania, but they earned them. And, you know, I was there, if, you know, WWE, expecting a main event spot at WrestleMania, and not that I didn't have my share, I did, but expecting a main event shot at WrestleMania, and Hulk Hogan comes in, and he does, what, one or two or three TVs a month, and, you know, all of a sudden he's champion, he's main event WrestleMania, and, you know, it was hard, but, you know, you have to realize that these guys are big names, and they're going to draw money, they're going to draw fans, which makes it better for you, which is going to draw money, and there's going to come a time in your career where you might want to do that too. And mm-hmm. if you put the fire out and you convince, which you're not going to convince Vince McMahon to do whatever you want, he's going to do what he wants, but you convince him not to do it anymore, you might end up in that position. And I just thought that if it is the health issue, I respect him because he walked away and the kid doesn't take drugs. He's straight.
Yep.
He's a good kid.
Yeah, he sure is.
But, you know, as far as if it's about booking and it's about, you know, these part-timers, you know, look into the future and see what you want to do. If you don't want to do the 250 match a year schedule eventually and you want to go part-time, then don't complain. If you're going to go full-time until you retire, okay, then I understand. You can't complain.
Well, you know, it's funny. I talked to Steve Austin not, you know, a day or two ago, but we talk, you know, a couple times a week.
I love Steve.
Yeah, he's the best. And he'll tell you the same thing. He talks glowingly about CM Punk because if Steve ever came back to wrestle, he's talked about, because, you know, there may be other guys, but CM Punk's one of the guys that he talks about as being the guy that Steve would like to work with.
And I do too, yeah.
You know, so that says a hell of a lot about a guy when two performers like Stone Cold and Kurt Angle want to work with you if they had the opportunity. When I was looking at all your record, not that I didn't, you know, wasn't around, but sometimes you forget things. Man, you had a series. You had a hell of a program with Chris Benoit.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it was some great stuff. I mean, I'm telling you, it was I'd tell any young wrestler, hey, watch these two guys. Watch how they're working, but they are physical, and they're telling a story. They're not just doing independent, you know, the Flying Orlandas. They're wrestling. What are your memories of Chris Benoit? And, Kurt, do you have any kind of personal theory on the last days of Chris's life? Because when all that went down, man, you could have knocked me over with a feather.
Yeah, me too. It's hard, you know, you try to think about it, you try to think, you know, how was his marriage? Was he really that affected by his wrestling? I didn't see it, you know, and for WWE to have to take any kind of blame for Chris's decision and whatever reason why he did it, I think that's a shame. I don't think WWE is at fault. I believe that, you know, whatever Chris did and whatever issues he had, I believe it was from relationship standards. And I'm not saying that I would have never even thought Chris would even think about doing something like that. So I'm not a doctor. I'm not a professional. I don't know why he did it or whether he had head trauma or whatever it is. All I know is Chris seemed to be okay. And he didn't have any kind of health issues that you could see. He didn't show any signs of anything like that that he was capable of doing. And I'll give you an example. I knew John DuPont. He was my club owner. Foxcatcher's coming out this year.
I was going to ask you that, but go ahead.
And John DuPont, he showed signs. Okay, we saw it. And Dave Schultz was about to leave the farm, but he felt an obligation to his wrestlers to stay and see it out to the Olympics. Dave was my coach. He was my mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave decided he's going to stay because he loved his wrestlers and he loved wrestling. And look where it got him. He got murdered.
Mm.
Okay, but we saw John having some signs. Chris didn't have anything like that. So to blame anyone else, it you can't. And I don't want to blame Chris for it, but, you know, who do you blame? It's just one of those crazy things that happen. I could tell you this, we're human, and anybody can snap at any time. Now, how far they go, we don't know. People are capable of going a lot further or a lot less. But, you know, it's unfortunate, and I love Chris. You know, I always will. Him and I had some incredible matches.
Oh, God.
I'd say I had the best chemistry with him. And I was only 2.5 years in the business when I was working with this guy. I mean, it was just like, finally, I met my nemesis that was supposed to be, you know, he was a warrior He was fearless and anything, you know, I always initiated the moves, but he would always complete it. And I never had the chemistry with anyone as far as thoroughbred wrestling than I did with Chris Benoit.
Yeah, he was really amazing. And I get asked this question about him all the time. You know, I said, you know, I hired him. I brought him into the locker room. Vince wasn't really aware of Chris's, you know, Vince is so busy that he didn't watch a lot of wrestling, you know.
Sure.
I don't know that he watched even after we taped the Raw or broadcast to Raw that he ever watched it back. And the same thing for SmackDown. He taped SmackDown on Tuesday. It airs on Friday. Did Vince watch those shows? You know, I don't know the answer definitively, but I would be willing to bet, you know, my OU season tickets, Oklahoma season tickets, that he didn't watch the shows back.
Right.
But he wasn't really aware of Benoit. He didn't, you know Benoit was undersized, and he saw that he was, you know, in Vince's view, that he was a dynamite kid devotee, and you know, he heart trained, and you know, but he was never a problem for us. He was never any issues, had no issues. No. You know, he was just a great guy to be around. So it all took us all, we were all shocked. And so I don't know what all went on that day, but you know, I miss him, and I wish things had changed. I said this before, people ask me this question, does Chris Benoit deserve to be in the Hall of Fame? And I say no. Here's why. If you could talk to him right now, if you get one message to him, he would tell you, don't induct me into the Hall of Fame, because it'll always be about me murdering my wife and my child and then committing suicide. It won't be about those great matches with Kurt Angle, that's for damn sure.
JR, I knew Chris was incredible when I saw him wrestle Bret Hart WCW before he came up. Those two guys, it was a lot of fun to watch them. But, you know, Chris was undersized, but I never saw a guy chop a tree down the way he did with Undertaker. You know, Chris was 5'8". Undertaker's 6'9". And he's just beating the crap out of Taker. And I'm going, how does this kid look so dominant? He was just so intense, and he was so good. You know, the size didn't matter anymore. It was, you got involved in the match, and you just forgot about how tall or how short he was.
Hey, I want to ask you about another match. Two or three things. We're rolling along here pretty good. A lot of people were wondering about your match with Shane McMahon at the 2001 King of the Ring. And I'll just say this, that Shane McMahon overachieved immensely to get in the ring with an Olympian and someone with your skill set, and him not having any quote-unquote, you know, long-term formal training. I thought his performance with you in that match was one of the more memorable matches that I've ever called.
Without a doubt. The kid, he just had it, JR. I don't know if it's because he grew up around the business. He was a great athlete, but, you know, he didn't know all the skills of pro wrestling. And for him to go out there and put on the performance he did, it surprised even me. I didn't even know how good that match was going to be till I got in the thick of it, and I'm going, dang, this kid is really good. Like, where's he been, and yeah, why is he so damn good? And he didn't take the bumps. He didn't train. He just showed up. You know, we did a few days of, you know, preparation for it, but that's not going to teach somebody how to be a pro wrestler.
Mm-mm.
He put on a performance of anyone's life, and I got to give Shane a lot of credit for that match.
I think he was always trying to impress Dad. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. That's not a negative on anybody's – that's not an indictment, by the way, folks.
Yeah. I do, too. To this day, my dad's passed on, and I still want to impress him.
So, well, you know, we're all in that same boat. You respect your father. You want to do well in his eyes. Another question here. Do you have a dream match opponent? And I have – some have suggested that they wanted to see Kurt Angle wrestle Bret Hart. For me, I'll tell you, I have two. One would be Dan Hodge. The other would be Jack Briscoe. But it doesn't have to be any of those three, but do you have an opponent from any generation that you didn't wrestle that you would like to have had the opportunity to wrestle?
You know, JR, the thing is, there was a little bit of a possibility of Kurt Angle, Bret Hart. It didn't occur. And I believe the reason is because, you know, Bret's health issues. And even though after I offered it to him, he still went on and wrestled Vince McMahon at WrestleMania, I believe he didn't want to do it because he knew he wasn't going to put on that Bret Hart performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't blame him for that. But I never thought about Danny Hodge or Jack Briscoe or even Lou Fez. You know, those guys were just, for their time, they were better than we are now. They just had so much passion and technique, and even, you know, obviously Danny Hodge, Jeff Briscoe were amateur wrestlers, and I'm going to tell you this, not a lot of amateur wrestlers do really that well in pro wrestling. Those guys did, and they did it the right way. They took their time, and their technique was solid, and you know, it wasn't rushed. It's a lot of fun to watch. I wish it was still like that today, but it's not. Okay, we're in a different time. We're in a different era. But watching those guys, you can learn so much from them, and there's a reason for that, because they were the best.
Yeah, they were amazing. Did you ever think that when you were in those sweaty, isolated wrestling rooms that comedy and pro wrestling would come as naturally to you as it did?
No.
The little cowboy, you know, hats.
But, JR, I'm the type of guy that you tell me to do something, and I'll go out and do it, whether it's great or not. I'm not afraid, and I'll make an ass out of myself if I have to. And I believe that there are a lot of wrestlers that might carry too much pride. I'm not doing that. That's silly. I'm going to look like an ass.
Yeah.
Hey, what does it matter? I want a gold medal in Olympics. How much of an ass am I going to look like? Maybe even 10 times more. I don't know. But what I'm saying is I'm not afraid or ashamed to do whatever I need to do to help the product. And, you know, I think that you and Vince saw that in me, and not at the beginning when I was training, but you saw that character adaptation, and you realize, wow, this guy has a lot more than just athletic ability.
Yeah.
This guy has some entertainment value. And it's quite funny. You know, I wasn't as funny as Stone Cold, but, you know, I carried my side as much as I could.
Oh, yeah.
I was as goofy as I could be, and I know eventually Vince McMahon said, okay, this kid's too goofy. We got to get him serious now.
Yeah, it was,
and that's when Vince kind of changed my character.
It was very entertaining, really entertaining. And I thought you stepped out of You broke the mold and started reinventing yourself. And that's what a lot of guys don't understand. A lot of pros don't understand that you have to figure out ways to be noticed, and you can't be afraid to continue to reinvent yourself. And that's a kiss of death just to do your five or six moves or your move set or your sequence of moves that you always do. You got to change. Everybody's got to change. And at WrestleMania 19, you and Brock Lesnar closed the show in Seattle.
Yes.
That was the card that had Rock Austin 3. It was Steve's last match, which we didn't advertise and promote. Did you feel any additional pressure being the closing match at WrestleMania 19, knowing that you had to follow Austin and Rock?
You know what, Jared? It was really tough. But because you have to realize, even though Brock was really hot, he was only in it for 6 months. You know, he was trained for 2 years, but he was only on TV for 6 months. And here I am, you know, back then that would have been, I was in the business 3 years. So you have Brock that's been at 6 months, me 3 years, and we're main event WrestleMania. It was tough. And knowing that Rock and Austin were there before us, but I had a lot of faith in Brock. I knew that he could hold his end. The problem I had with myself is I couldn't really do much with my left arm because of my neck. And Vince McMahon, I called him 2 weeks prior to Mania. I said, I can't wrestle. I can't lift my left arm. So he said, all right, let me see what we can do about changing. He wanted me to lose to Brock SmackDown before Mania. And I went down to see my neighbor, and they have a special needs kid. And the kid showed me the cover of DirecTV, and it was me and Brock, and I started crying. And he said, what's wrong? And I said, I need to make a phone call. And I called Vince and said, listen, if you want me to lose a Brock on Thursday instead of Sunday, I might as well go Sunday and just do WrestleMania and have the surgery afterward. I mean, even though you only wanted me to go 30 seconds on this show, I'd rather give 30 minutes against Brock Lesnar in the main event at WrestleMania and then have the surgery afterward. Because my neck ain't going to get any worse. It's broken. So let's go ahead and do it. And we did. And thank God I did it. And, you know, I think everybody all around was happy except for Brock when he missed the moonsault and on his head.
Yeah, Shooting Star Press kind of almost got the better of him. Here's the deal. That's where you push the envelope. Everybody says you got to have a WrestleMania moment. But he needed to do you and him together in the ring. That Shooting Star Press was not needed. It was just being sensational. Yeah. It was ill planned. It was the wrong play called, but it did.
Well, you know who called that play, right?
No.
Me.
You did?
I saw him do it at OVW. Let's finish the show out like this. And the thing is, JR, he was hitting it early in the day, three quarters of the way across the ring, and I thought, all right, I'm going to have to be in the middle because he'll be tired. And when he went, he did a second guess kind of stutter. And right when I saw that out of the corner of my eye, and I thought, wait a minute, he just kind of fell forward, and he re-caught his legs, and he just went. And he didn't even make it halfway. And, oh, boy, man, when he landed,
scary.
I thought he was dead. Yep. I'm thinking, okay, I have a broken neck. He's dead. Where are we going to go from
it's
here?
It's scary, man.
You know?
Hey.
So it was a crazy situation. But that was my call, JR, and that was me being young and stupid, thinking young and stupid things. When Brock and I could have a five-star wrestling match in the middle of the ring, with an F5 or an angle slam for a finish, and it was just me being stupid.
It gives me chills to think about the match that you guys could have and still could have someday. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
I get asked this too a lot. This is one of my little one-man show things I do with Q&As. I call it a scrimmage, but that time in South Dakota where you're ready to do TV and you and him got in the ring and had your little, set to of that I got in big trouble over, by the way. You and Brock. Now, here's the deal. The legend of the shoot match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar in the ring before TV, it sold out the ringside with all the boys, and you guys were going for it. Or at least it seemed to me like you were going for it, because I kind of got out there in the middle of it. Briscoe and I both got in trouble. What's your take on that story? Because, see, there's some people that say, well, Angle was in control and Brock was getting frustrated. And then there are others that said, well, Brock was just too big and too strong and Kurt couldn't handle him. What's your take on that?
You know what? I will say this about Brock. He is a thoroughbred world-class athlete that a guy his size, you just never see. Now, does that mean he's not beatable? No. Brock, he wasn't as good in technique, he made up for it in athleticism. So what I'm saying is Brock Lesnar didn't have all the technique in the world as an amateur wrestler, but what he did well. And the match was tight. There was no doubt about it. There was only one takedown. I took Brock down, and that was it. And that's when I put the fingers up and said, two, and it's over. But we went a good 12 to 15 minutes. It was a good battle. Brock did outweigh me by about 70 pounds at the time. So he was a big boy, and I knew that. But I was still in the prime of my, you know, I didn't start feeling any kind of, you know, soreness or whatever you want to call it or age wearing on me till I turned 40. Even when I was 37, 38, I was still kicking hard. But, you know, with Brock, it was a tight match. Did I beat him? Yeah, I edged him. But, you know, the rumor was Kurt Angle kicked the crap out of him. I never heard the other side where Brock beat me. But, no, it was tight. Brock is amazing. The thing is, Brock can do whatever he wants. If he would have stayed in pro football, he would have made it. He decided he didn't want to go to NFL Europe for a year.
Right.
But Brock was UFC champion. He was WWE champion. Brock would have been a pro football player. Brock could have done anything he wanted. That's how good of an athlete he is.
Yeah, I agree. He's a special, very special. Well, the you know, Briscoe runs down there and breaks it up, and I come in toward the tail end of it. And so then the word, of course, the Stooges couldn't wait to get back to Vince and say, well, Angle and Lesnar just had a – they just shot – had a, they were shooting in the ring. And so I get called into Vince's office and, like, you know, I thought you're smarter than that. How could you let that happen? I didn't book it. They just they wanted to try each other, and the boys were egging them on, and they're both competitive, and they're both athletic, and they thought they'd try it on for size. But, boy, did I get my ass chewed out on that day. You're putting two main event guys. So they could have killed.
I didn't even know you got heat over it, JR. I'm sorry for that.
No,
it was me egging Brock on. I kept challenging him every week. What happened was a couple months prior, he just told somebody that, oh, Angle's too small. And it got on my nerves a little bit. Like, wait a minute. I wrestled guys his size all my life. You know, I don't have a problem. When I got in there with him, I was like, damn, this guy's tough. But, yeah, it was me continuing to, you know, rivet him. He had Big Show in that ring right before me, and he was throwing Big Show around like a rag doll. It was scary. And to throw Big Show around like that, gosh dang, you have to be something special.
Oh, yeah, and he is.
Well, I got in there a little nervous thinking, man, this guy's strong and he's quick, you know. But, I controlled it because I knew better technique. I was an Olympic gold medalist, not just a NCAA Division I champion. So I had a lot better technique and obviously a more well-rounded amateur wrestler than Brock was. But as far as thoroughbred athlete, gosh, doesn't get any better than Brock.
No, he may be the best pure big man athlete that we ever signed.
Without a doubt.
You know, and
Taker's right up there with him because I can't believe the way that guy works.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he's special, yeah. Too. He's a special man, too. I used to call him on TV the conscience of WWE, and then I got called down for that but I believed it. He was so over with me as a man.
Yeah.
And when I was in charge of the talent roster, I'd go to Taker sometimes and ask for advice or say, hey, could you do a little intervention for me? And he never said no. He always came through. And so I thought, this guy is a conscience of the locker room.
He's the most dependable guy in there, too.
That's why he was the judge at all the wrestlers' courts.
Yes, he was, you know, and it was brutal.
And so whenever he laid down a sentence, you adhere to it.
Or he was going to find you.
Yeah, and that's not good. Hey, when you get done wrestling, you know, I'm always curious about this, about guys. When you're done wrestling, in the ring wrestling, would you have any interest in either one being a manager like Paul Heyman, a high-level impactful manager, and or would you be interested in broadcasting in wrestling?
You know what, JR, both of those are great options. I love doing that. I've always loved the entertainment side. I've always loved the way you call matches. My passion, I would love to do it, but at the same time, I'd want to be teaching either pro or amateur wrestling or both. I love them both so much. I have a passion for them. I have a lot to teach the younger guys, and you know, I pick it up like a sponge, and it stays with me, and I want to share my wisdom, whether it be pro or amateur or both.
That's good. Well, hey, I believe that in the WWE's Performance Center that they need to continue to rotate coaches in and out, guest coaches. You're here for a month. You're here for 3 weeks.
Right.
Have your staples there, no doubt. But you need the kids need to experience different styles and techniques,
fresh philosophy, and somebody definitely. Well, you got to switch it around. You want your thoroughbreds there, but you also want to keep rotating it so these kids get fresh minds. You know, fresh ideas. Yes.
You got any regrets thus far in your since we signed you back in '97 or '98? Any regrets?
You know what? The only regret I have is blaming everybody else but me about my mistakes. That's hard to deal with, and I have to learn in AA that, you know, that addiction is a disease and you can't blame yourself. Well, it's kind of hard to just blame the disease, you know. It feels like I'm just taking the responsibility and say, well, it's not me, it's the disease, you know. So I have a hard time dealing with blaming others like Vince about my personal demons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blaming other people about the things that have happened to me. It's really about self-responsibility and taking the self-blame and moving on, becoming a better person and staying clean and sober. I've done it for 11 months, and I'm going to continue to do it the rest of my life.
Yes, and it's a day-to-day trial, Kurt.
Yes, it is.
Every
it's
day.
It's not easy.
Every day.
But, you know,
it's your
thing
point.
Is, you know, I thank God that I don't have the triggers that a lot of addicts have. I have a focus. When I'm on that focus and I'm thinking about what I want to do, nothing really stops me, and it's my faith in God. And I just, you know, I'm very grateful that I don't have the triggers that a lot of these addicts have, because I am an addict, and I do realize that, and I know that you can't just go light on your recovery. You have to stay solid, and you have to take it day by day. If you don't, you know, you could end up going the wrong way, and I don't want that. I don't want that to happen. Not to me, not to my wife or kids.
Yeah, and as we said earlier, the end result normally is tragedy and heartbreak. And
I'm not ready to die.
No, you're not. God forbid. And you're not ready to quit being a dad.
I'll be a dad for many, many years, and I'm going to be happy doing it.
Keep having those babies, they're going to start calling you the father of our country. Good Lord, man.
I know. My wife wants to have one more. I'm really hesitant on this, but, you know.
Well, just practice.
She's the boss.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. Hey, are you going to go see Foxcatcher?
Yeah. I was really upset I wasn't part of the film. I tried to be, even as an advisor. But they based it around, JR, they based it around the brothers and John DuPont. And I understand that, the Schultz brothers and John DuPont, but you know, I was a big part of that organization.
Yeah.
I was there all the time. And then I became the first member of the Dave Schultz Wrestling Club when that occurred. And Nancy Schultz came to me, his wife, and said, will you be the first member? And I was the first gold medalist as a member of the Dave Schultz Wrestling Club. So I just wanted to give whatever I could to the film. But they seemed to have it covered, and they had a direction they wanted to go, and it didn't entail me.
The critics say it's amazing. The critic
that's
seen it, that said it's absolutely amazing. Of course, you know, me being here in Oklahoma, you know, the Schultz brothers they're legends here because they wrestled at OU, and they were big Sooners, and, you know, they were in that whole era, you know, Doc and all those guys. They had a hell of a wrestling team. Well, they had some talent there. So I'm anxious to see it as well. And of course, DuPont's now in prison. Did he die?
Yeah.
Is he?
No, I think he's still alive, but I know he's in prison, and that's where he belongs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I hope I get to see you soon. I want you to stay well. You know, do all you can to live that one day, win every day. Just win every day. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your family. And know that, you know, you're so loved by so many of us and so respected by people around the world, that including me, quite frankly. And I don't bother me to say that. You know, and I just know that you have so much to contribute. And I personally hope I'm around, God willing, to see all those things happen. So enjoy Pittsburgh, and I'll hopefully see you sooner than later.
All right, my friend. Thank you, JR.
All right, buddy. See you later. Thanks. Bye-bye.
God bless.